have no idea what loss is.
You have no idea what loss is.
I reckon it's got something to do with that girl.
He's got everything to do with that little girl.
I can take care of myself.
How many close calls have we had?
Can't be any worse out there. Can it?
Every guy in this room is staring at you right now. Maybe they're staring at you. Maybe they're jealous of you.
I'm just a girl. Not a threat.
Oh, Ellie. I think they should be terrified.
Welcome to the world of The Last of Us. It's Entertainment Talk's podcast for the Naughty Dog video game series and the HBO on Max and Sky Atlantic television series. I'm your host, Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is David. How's it going?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good, good. Season 2, Episode 3, The Path. Or The Path, rather. What did you think of this episode?
I rather like this episode. I thought Ellie was great in this. It's of course the aftermath of Joel's death last week, and I thought the opening of it was quite sort of intense with her sort of waking up screaming, and then you get this 3-month time jump, and you're back in hospital with Ellie and she's trying to be released, and I rather like how she played that. I thought that was quite good. And then, yeah, as you go through the episode, you're getting sort of some interesting bits and pieces introduced, sort of points to the direction that maybe we're going in for the rest of this, I assume. But, we're back on the road again, which is interesting. It's a sort of nice setup for where we're going forward by the looks of things. Some new groups to talk about and all that sort of stuff. So good solid episode, I thought.
Nice. I love this episode again. I loved it in a different way to episode 2, but Last of Us will often do that kind of thing to you, or at least that's been my experience anyway. You love it in different ways and for different reasons, and it tends to lift you up and beat you down. But I should have said, by the way, I usually start these episodes off with this, because we obviously have 3 different versions of these podcasts. This is your spoiler review for this particular episode. There'll be no future spoiler parts discussed here. I already did that yesterday, so if you want to go listen to the weekly spoiler predictions episode based on what we have here and predicting how the rest of the season will go, that's not this podcast. That is the other one, which is called Spoiler Predictions. And if you want my spoiler free review for the episode, you don't necessarily need that one per se, but that is also out there as well. But this is your spoiler review for the episode, and there might be some spoiler free predictions, because that's just the normal thing to do on a review. But just to make it clear on what we're talking about here. I think one of the things I did say on my spoiler-free review this week is I went through like a big range of different emotions watching this episode. There's obviously all the stuff with dealing with the grief and loss of everybody in Jackson, including Joel, the whole scene with Tommy cleaning up his arm, and there's just this one line in that scene which I thought was great, and then there's obviously, Bella Ramsey, Ellie recovering in the hospital, which was, I say great, is obviously very sad, very well done. And then there was a bit in this episode I was completely grinning ear to ear, which I really, really liked doing. And then an introduction of something else, which I just thought was a really awesome part of the episode. And I was really looking forward to seeing that part. And we have those people now, we had those people now. So I thought that was really, really great to see. And then you just have, because to me, you've got kind of 4 parts. You've got the grief and the loss, and then you've got kind of what's next, setting up, you know, what is the town going to, because it's not just a case of what's our main protagonist going to do and her, let's say, partner at the moment. Depends on how you define that relationship. Her sort of partner. partner in crime, but then also what does Jackson actually want to do? Again, there's a ton of stuff in this episode that's not in this game, but fits pretty perfectly with what the show is doing. There's also plenty in this episode that is in the game that was played out very well again. But you've got kind of the drama of sort of, okay, what do we do next? The sadness of sort of, you know, the grief and the loss of everybody and how everybody feels about that and the voting and stuff. Then you've got like the new setup stuff, and then you've got I'll team all the teaser at the end. So yeah, that's how I kind of, I mean, everybody's got their own different way of looking at the episodes, but I went through four sort of different stages or emotions, if you want to sort of call them that. And I loved that experience. To me, that this isn't, and this might just be me, right? I mean, I know, again, in terms of me and you, David, obviously we're going to have different experiences with the episodes, but even for, let's say, game and show people, so people like me, we don't all have to, like, experience it the same way, I suppose. We can all get different bits and bobs and different pieces from it. And it's not even necessarily about kind of, oh yeah, just going through this really great story again. It's sort of, like how it's being put together and all that sort of thing is, it's its own sort of particular experience. Because even with, let's say, like, The Walking Dead or with Last of Us Season 1, those were more kind of straightforward adaptations. This second season story isn't as straightforward, as you may be able to tell, isn't quite a straightforward adaption. There's not really a kind of A to B storyline. There's like other zigs and zags and other bits and other characters and stuff. So to me, it's not necessarily about me just enjoying the episode. It's about me getting this sort of different experience of it. And for that specific part of it, because there's the quality of the episode, like the making of the episode itself, you know, lighting, camera work, directing, acting, you know, all those sorts of things, as like, is it an actual good episode? And yes, it's a very good episode. But it's also, again, coming from a video game person, having like a particular experience with it. And I'm really just loving what they're doing with certain things so far. There's still a lot of questions, still a lot of bits and pieces, and that's what the spoiler predictions part is for. Yeah, really great stuff. Really, really great stuff. It was interesting coming away from this week, because last week it was like, oh my god, is this the best episode ever? And bing, bang, boom, big action set pieces, and that's what satisfies some people. And because this episode is kind of, this is almost, you know how Game of Thrones used to do like its 10th episode? Like it did like the big thing in episode 9, yeah, and then had like the aftermath and the setup. This is sort of that, but it's in the middle of the season.
Yes.
Or, you know, just before the halfway point in the season, which is unusual for a third episode to do, but it fits quite well here. So I saw some things of people saying like, oh, this episode's a letdown or it's a disappointment because it isn't as big as the last one. But that's not really a fair thing to do, because
no,
you also can't expect that every episode. I mean, what, was Abby going to, you know, come back and attack Jackson and then have another big action set piece or another big horde? It's just, you know, that's, if you want that kind of stuff, that is kind of more what Walking Dead tended to do. Or if you want a more silly version of that, that's what sort of Z Nation did. Yeah. So yeah, anyway, just wanted to, now I've got a negative story to talk about and a positive story to talk about. I'll get the negative one out of the way first, and I didn't want to kind of, this isn't news for the show per se, but I didn't want to gloss over this, and it's not a nice thing to talk about. But Bella Ramsey has come out and said something. It says, The Last of Us star Bella Ramsey on comparisons to the video game Ellie and deactivating social media accounts. Says, I got quite fixated on the way that Ellie looks in the game and her muscle definition. My body type isn't that, and it was a challenge for me to let myself off the hook for not looking computer generated. Excuse me. I also knew that I'd deactivate it one day and never really wanted to have social media in the first place. If I just avoid Twitter and Reddit, which are the two worst places for what's being said about Bella, particularly more so Twitter, obviously. If I just avoid Twitter and Reddit, which now I'm doing, then everything's totally fine. I don't know about you, but of course we're in like some different social media circles and things like that. Obviously, a lot of my sort of Twitter feed, let's say, is, you know, full on Last of Us talk and spoiler talk, because I follow those sorts of accounts. I imagine you have a bit of a different experience, but Yeah, look, I'm not gonna. It's a bit of a waste of energy to kind of moan about this per se, but from me, obviously calling out abuses, calling out abuse and stuff. And this has kind of been going on since season one. I think we did mention it maybe in our season one coverage of people saying, like she, looks really ugly and kind of calling her like potato face and all this sort of other stuff. I mean, look, if you individually look at Bella Ramsey and for you, in your opinion, go, okay, she's not quite Ellie for me. That's not abuse. That's kind of just saying, okay, maybe the actress that they've selected isn't doing it for you. And they knew that going in, that not everybody's going to be satisfied with all of the casting. I think she's knocking it out of the park. Personally, especially with some of the big scenes, like obviously Joel's death and the hospital scene, and some of the more quiet moments as well, like the jacket and the grave and those scenes that we'll talk about later. But as Craig and Neil have both said multiple times, it's not about okay. And I think The Walking Dead got pretty lucky in this way. Now that I think about it, it's not necessarily about okay, get the person who looks exactly like the character. It's about okay, who can portray your version that you're going for in this show? Because they're not even the exact same versions of the game, because you have different people playing them. There's going to be like slight bit of differences there. Now that I think about it though, with The Walking Dead, a lot of their really big main characters did look like they've been pulled from the comic books, but that's kind of the only time I've ever seen an adaptation sort of do that. But yeah, abuse is nasty, and what these people are saying, and I don't know if doing is the word to use to Bella, is really horrible. There's the line somewhere between like talking to these people and engaging in these conversations and just leaving them to it and kind of blocking them out, I suppose. So I don't know. Anyway, I don't know how much of this you've kind of seen, but what do you think of this here?
I haven't really directly seen much of that sort of stuff. Like you say, we're in sort of different circles with that. And if it's a show that I know is I'm currently watching, I tend to stay away from things like the Reddit threads on that particular show, because if I haven't, America gets it first, and I haven't seen it as it comes out, so I tend to avoid those to avoid make sure I'm avoiding spoilers. But I mean, I am aware that there has been some stuff floating around about Bella ever since the first season, and I mean, the people out there that are saying she's not attractive enough to play Ellie, which is one of the comments which
That's
has
the
been
more
coming out,
weirder corner of things. Yeah.
which is it, well, if you're saying that you're attracted to a 14-year-old video game character, I think the problem's you, not the actress or the actor.
Yeah, there's a
So,
deeper issue there. So,
yeah.
'cause that specific conversation of like, oh, does she look, good enough? That conversation did start in season one when obviously Ellie was 5 years younger.
yeah, and And in terms of her portrayal of the character on TV, she absolutely, I would say that Bella absolutely nails it. And she has very much the essence of Ellie. I think she is got that snarky kind of fun feel to it. She's brilliant. And the person playing a character doesn't always look identical to the when they've been portrayed in other media. It works the other way around. I mean, you look at some of the comic books of, say, Star Wars, and some of the visual representations in the comic books of some of the very, very well-known iconic Star Wars characters don't always look identical. So, it works both ways. But I mean, I think as long as she's getting or they are getting the essence of that character, which Bella certainly is, I think she's doing a brilliant job. They are doing a brilliant job. I know she said you can't misgender her, but I'm just trying to cover my bases.
It's interesting that you actually can't do that, because some people would deliberately want to, but she's like, no, you actually can't insult me that way, because I go by all of them. So,
Yes. So, but yeah, I think Bella is great in this. I think she's absolutely nailing the role, and you know, yeah, she doesn't look exactly like the video game character, but it's a video game character. So, you know, I think that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Just on the acting thing, by the way, because I've seen a lot of shout outs about like, hey, Caitlin's doing really well, Isabel's doing really well, Pedro's doing really well. It's not really a problem. The thing for me with the acting in the second season, because I've not been calling out like individual performances as such, because everybody's doing so well, nobody's specifically sticking out to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because then I think like, oh, Bella's done really well in this scene. Oh, but so did Isabel, but so did Young, but so did Gabriel, but so did, you know, there's no one kind of sticking out to me. So, because they're all doing so well, which is an unusual thing, I suppose. So they're all doing really brilliantly with what they're doing. To kind of flip it to a positive side, though, I've seen a lot of, let's call it queer love, towards both Ellie and Dina, and obviously the two of them, and there's, you know, shipping conversations going around and things like that. A lot of that's been really kind of just, some of it's sappy and silly and funny and all that sort of thing, but it's a stark contrast to reading like, oh, you know, Bella's ugly or whatever. So it's been fun and funny to kind of read just some of those nice little conversations. And then there's obviously scenes between the two of them in the game that people are sort of wondering when they'll come up. And it's been fun kind of engaging in those conversations as well. So I'm sure that, not that I've come across any, cause I think the name Deli has gone around, which is their ship name. I've not seen any particular like accounts with that. That's just the name that's being talked about. So that's just been a fun, light-hearted, you know, with all the darkness of sort of the negative conversation about the show, and obviously the show being very dark itself, in case you haven't guessed that in the second season so far, and that's just been really kind of nice to see. So yeah, unfortunately you take some of the good and take some of the bad, but anyway, let's crack on with the episode itself. 203, The Path. Let's get into the recap. So, in the aftermath of the infected attack on Jackson, Wyoming, and Joel's death, Tommy cleans Joel's body. Ellie is admitted to a hospital and wakes up screaming upon remembering Joel's death. There's a lot of bits in here that I really like. Obviously, seeing kind of the crispy, if you want to call them that, all the infected outside, and you see the sort of aftermath, and look, I've never pretended to be a visuals person, because I'm not, but there is a lot of really, really, like, I notice when good visuals are there, like in games, shows and films, I just don't always care that much, because it's not always at the top of my list. I've played plenty of games that have looked really good. Heck, I'm playing one right now called Uncharted 4, and it looks fantastic. I'm not blind to that sort of stuff. It's just not something I appreciate as much as others, but the cinematography in this episode, particularly this kind of opening shot, I thought looked really, really good as well. So you got that kind of going on. Tommy tending to Joel's body and kind of cleaning up, specifically cleaning obviously his left hand, left arm, when the broken watch is on there. Something kind of, I don't know what way to describe it, but something kind of interesting about that, and I think they do the same detail in the game, because I think from Sarah's death all the way through to when Joel dies, I'm pretty sure it has that broken watch on the entire time. Like through the rest, like goes to sleep with it on and like everything, which is interesting, because of course it's, well, technically useless because it's completely broken and doesn't actually tell the time, but it's sort of, and he himself doesn't ever really talk about that, but of course that's something that Joel would not really, like when you bring up Sarah around him, he sort of, you know, shuts down a little bit. I just thought that was a nice kind of detail that he's sort of taken that to the grave with him. Actually, he hasn't, because it got taken off, and Ellie picks it up later, or he's taken that to sort of death with him. And so as you kind of get all that happening, I do really like as well that the only line said in this scene is say hi to Sarah for me. And really good acting with from Gabriel Luna, as well as Tommy. I really like what they're doing with Tommy in this show. But again, when you cut away from certain gameplay parts and you trim that down a bit, and you get more time with other stuff, and of course you don't control Tommy in the game unless you're playing no return mode, it's nice to, and that's one of the things that Neil has kind of brought up, that one of the advantages of the show is when you, instead of playing as either Joel, Abby or Ellie, You don't have to follow the protagonist character or the playable character, because you can naturally do the TV thing and cut away to different scenes, hence all the Jackson parts. So I think that's giving a big advantage to both Maria and to Tommy and to Jesse as well, kind of. And I thought that was a good way to sort of start. Yeah, this scream from Ellie was, well, to say it was sad was really obvious, but very kind of effective. And again, you look at something like this and you look at the scene with like Joel's jacket and the grave, like, yeah, you've got to look at that and kind of realize or recognize the quality of what Bella Ramsey's doing with the character of Ellie. So anyway, starting off with the Jackson and Tommy scene, what did you think about that?
Yeah, the opening scream I thought was just, it's heartbreaking, and just it's a very small thing right at the very start, and you know, we then get this sort of 3 month time jump that comes straight after this. So it's a very short scene, but it really quite impactful. And you know, Tommy sat there cleaning Joel's body. I did wonder whether it was Pedro under that, but I rather suspect it wasn't. Given Pedro seems to pick roles where he doesn't need to be on screen, like the Mandalorian. I did notice as well in the opening credits, Pedro isn't actually listed in the opening credits anymore either. I happened to spot that. It goes straight from Bella to Gabrielle Luna.
Also his silhouette's not there anymore.
Ah, I didn't spot that.
Okay.
Some people
wondered if they would add like another character, like Dina or something, because Dina's kind of her partner now. So
yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, that would make sense. But yes, I noticed that in the credits. But yeah, I mean, it's incredibly sort of sad seeing this immediate aftermath, but it's just beautifully done. And they don't linger on it either, which I rather like. You know, you get this tiny little scene of sort of immediately afterwards, and you know, or within a few hours, days of, you know, her being in the hospital and the Tommy dealing with the body, and then it suddenly jumps forward 3 months. So I like how they did that, and you know, it keeps it's a really clever bit of just little bit of pacing in terms of the, you know, where they're going with the story, because I have the feeling that if that had been The Walking Dead, there would have been like an entire episode about the aftermath.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And just would have been wallowing for an hour. whereas, yeah, with this, it's like you get to see it, you get to see the initial reactions, and then that's it. You jump and we move forward. And I really like how they did that.
Yeah. Speaking of 3 months later, Jackson is still being rebuilt and Ellie is deemed physically ready to leave hospital, but has a psychological, I think I said that correctly, yes, evaluation with Gail, who asks her about her feelings on Joel's death and references their last session together, where he expressed that he saved Ellie. Though Gail probes for information, Ellie claims not to know what he was referencing and insists she has mentally recovered. I've been thinking about this episode all day and been listening to music of The Last of Us and that. That's just kind of what I do at work on Wednesdays as I'm, you know, getting prepared to talk about this later. Rather than me giving my opinion on this, how much do you think Ellie's lying?
I think she is lying through her teeth. I really do. I mean, I don't think she's over the death. I think she puts up a really good front. I have to say, I adore Gail as well. Catherine O'Hara is just amazing in that role, and when she pops up later as well, she's funny and just such a wonderful character. Was she entirely an invention for the TV show, that character?
There was something about, because obviously they spent a lot of time brainstorming part two, that Gail was going to be introduced, and because there's been a lot of times they've tried this in the first game as well, of trying to inject like a romantic partner for Joel. And she was gonna, I think before they made her the therapist and before they tied her to Eugene, obviously, because Eugene wasn't even tied to anybody in the game, because Gail wasn't in the game. So there was something about they had the idea of a character called Gale or something like that, and they were going to make her like Joel's sort of Jackson girlfriend. And there was a similar idea with the first game, first season, where there's this random woman on it's only in the game, not in the show. When you're visiting the hydroelectric dam in the first game that Tommy has, that's sort of connected to Jackson, there's a random woman. You can walk past her and completely miss it, but there's an optional conversation where he talks to her about something. I can't quite remember what it is. I think it's just like what Tommy's built and all this sort of stuff. And there was a brainstormed idea that was going to be a romantic partner for Joel. I know mm-hmm. there's some, bits and history and hints with Tess and stuff like that. But I guess they kind of never got around to giving him a romantic partner because they brainstormed it twice and they never actually gave him one. So yeah. Poor Joel. I guess he just had to have a daughter that died and then a daughter that he saved. So the one thing I will talk about, because the thing I don't want to talk about is whether or not I think that she lied. Because I was thinking about that today and what that kind of actually means and all that sort of thing. I do like the bit between when they're talking about, because Gale's confused as to, okay, he said he wronged you, but he also said he saved you. Ellie, what do you kind of think of that? And then she's like, no, I don't feel wronged, that and all that sort of stuff. There's the two different sort of parts there, about like, he saved her, but did he wrong her? But what does that mean? And trying to get that out of her. And then the whole thing about like their last conversation. So, yeah, I think for the, again, cause this conversation isn't in the course of Gale's not in the game anyway. This isn't in the game. So between, I think the audience, both sides of the audience, TV only and game and TV, and then Gale and Ellie, it's kind of interesting for all three of us to kind of witness, I suppose. So, but again, given the whole idea of like what happened at the hospital and the immunity and how secret all of that is, Ellie obviously wasn't going to tell her about that here. And like, oh yeah, Joel thinks he saved me because of the hospital and whatever else. So yeah. What do you kind of think of that?
I just like the sort of interaction there. I think it works really well, and the way Ellie's sort of avoiding and that conversation of sort of Gale kind of pushing a little bit and trying to find out more about what Joel was talking about, and Ellie kind of, denying or not knowing, really understanding. We don't really know exactly how much she knew, even now. So, yeah, I mean, I found that all kind of interesting. But yeah, I mean, I think Gale's a really fun character that they've added into play with. And it is sort of, yeah, it's a good kind of dark comedy that she's sort of bringing into this, as well as a nice dramatic role to it. So, yeah, I think it works really well.
Definitely. Ellie visits Joel's house, crying upon touching his jacket. She also finds his watch and gun. Dina arrives and tells Ellie the group who killed Joel, members of the Washington Liberation Front, hence WLF, are based in Seattle. She tells her about the names and about going out and finding them, and they know that there's a town meeting coming up as well, which we'll get to soon. As usual with these episodes, I tend to cry at stuff, and I'm not ashamed to admit that, because that's kind of the purpose, and that's sort of what I want it to do to me, but because I want it to be effective. That's the whole point of this sad story. This was kind of where it happened for me, like the whole, because there was a few little bits across the episode where I got sort of sad and a bit, superior. There was several of them across the episode, like the grave and this scene, and obviously Tommy with Joel, and then there's Ellie in the hospital, all kind of just scenes that make you sort of feel like that. But and the thing is, for me, on the three different watches, because I did three different watches again, I get emotional at different... I don't know if it's the way that our sort of brains behave or the way our brains react to different stuff that we have and haven't seen or whatever. Reacted differently to different scenes on my different watches. But that's kind of natural, I suppose. But yeah, this was kind of where it hit me, this with this particular part with the jacket and with the gun. This part is in the game. So you do walk up to... Joel's house, you manually pick up kind of the watch and the gun. Interesting part is that I think in the game, because you can press the put away button once you've picked up Joel, because you can pick it up and cause flashy graphics and all that, you can sort of rotate it and give it a look, and you know, the light hits it different ways because it's, you know, cool technology and all that sort of thing. And you press circle to put it away, so she takes it with her. I'm not sure why she doesn't here, and that seemed to really bother a lot of people. Like, why didn't she take it with her? I was just sort of, okay, she didn't take it with her.
She did. She pocketed, she took the gun with her. She...
No, the watch.
The watch. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say. Yes, okay. Yeah, well, yeah. Okay, fair enough. She took the gun.
But I don't really, because you don't, unless you look at like your artifacts as your, because the same thing you can kind of do in Uncharted, you can look at things that you've collected, which I guess is a Naughty Dog thing. I don't think it, unless it's something I'm forgetting, that I don't think it makes that much of a difference, really.
No.
So, because yeah, you can, like, you've got different maps and different artifacts that you've got, and like Ellie's journal and stuff, and you can open them up and look at them in your menus and stuff, but that's about it. I don't recall in the game, like, when she takes the watch with her, if it actually, if she takes it out and looks at it or like references it later. I don't think that she does. So, anyway, but yeah, she does take the gun with her, which yes, you can, that's sort of the bit where, you unlock the gun. Let's sort of call it that. Cause she's got a little pistol with her and then she takes this with her. So that's the point in the game where you kind of unlock the gun, and she'll pick up others along the way as well. So, there's some other small little differences, and again, this is where gameplay fundamentally comes in different to TV, because you have free reign to look in the house for as long, you can, you know, do it for hours if you want to, but obviously that's not going to happen in the episode. So you can like have more of a look around in Joel's house in the game and have a look at stuff, but of course, yeah, of course, with the show, you're not going to suddenly control Bella Ramsey in somewhere and then make her walk around the house. And yeah. It's a filmed scene. So, yeah, it's just the difference there. Because there's things like Joel's coffee mug. There's things like a photo of him and Sarah, among other things. So it's pretty much exactly the same. You go up to his jacket, you press triangle, she smells that and everything. And then the gun, the box is on the bed and stuff. So yeah, and then she goes downstairs. The only little difference, well, I say it's a little difference, it'll take me a long time to explain all the different structural stuff, Maria is downstairs with Dina, and they all talk about it instead of just Dina. That's the quickest way to sort of mention all of that, so, which I guess they remixed into the town hall meeting. So anyway, any thoughts on the jacket and the gun and everything else going on here?
I mean, the jacket and the gun, I kind of assumed that sequence was probably ripped straight from the game in one way or another, and as well as potentially in some way the conversation with Dina. I do love those two, and the conversation that she kind of has with her when they're sat at the table of like, I bought cookies because I'm about to upset you, you know, it's that, I thought that was really sweet, and the way that she kind of does that, clearly they're two friends that know each other really, really well, and Ellie seems to forgive Dina fairly quickly from that, given that she gives the sort of information over. I mean, Tommy seems slightly more pissed about not being told earlier as well, when they talk to him later. But, you know, I can sort of see why she held back and, you know, she didn't want to upset her. And she's entirely right. Had she told her in the hospital, Ellie would have been ripping tubes out and insisting she goes, you know, hell for leather after the group. So I can understand why she did it the way she did it. It makes perfect sense. So, yeah, I mean, we know that they're assuming is a small group called the Washington Liberation Front. I mean, by the end of the episode, might not be as small as they think they possibly are, but I just like the setup for it, and you know, it's a thing that sort of pushes them back on the road, and just the back and forth between Ellie and Dina is just wonderful. They're really fun together, those two characters.
Definitely. And then, yeah, mentions like that sort of describing some of them. The only one that she can't remember is Mel. She's like, oh yeah, there was the bald one. I think she's called Nora. No mention of like Mel's name, which I thought was interesting. So. But because obviously a difference is like she wasn't knocked out and concussed, she was just put to sleep, so everything that she still saw, which was like, and heard, which was the names and the badge and stuff, she would still remember that. So
yeah,
there you go. Speaking of the meeting, you were talking about Ellie and Dina meet with Tommy to discuss going after Abby. He mentions this town meeting and reminds Ellie that I was his brother too. I thought that worked quite well, actually, that little line of, because she's very gung-ho and understandably, and Tommy's had more time to kind of calm down because he wasn't, you know, hospitalized or whatever. And he's basically saying that, okay, you can't really go after them yet, and there's a town meeting, so we'll kind of sort it out there. But, like, and I get it from Ellie's point of view of also saying, like, okay, if it was Joel and he was looking for you, he'd be, you know, halfway there already, which she says the same thing in the game, but she says it to Maria for other different reasons that I'll explain later. But yeah, I kind of liked, because Tommy isn't in that scene when she says that in the game, so having that here and having that, you know, the Jackson connection with the attack and everything, I think it fits quite well. But then, yeah, her saying about, okay, Joel would have been halfway there, and then Tommy kind of says, okay, that's if somebody was alive and he's not alive, and then goes to the line of, like, don't forget I knew him as well, I was his brother, and that kind of does shut Ellie down, which, you know, for a angsty, currently angry 19-year-old teenage girl, it's not exactly the easiest type of person to calm down or to realize that they are wrong in a situation. So yeah, it's not a ton to talk about here. It kind of more sets up into the town meeting. But again, this connects back to, I really like what they're doing with Tommy, mainly because they're kind of giving him more screen time, which again is a difficult thing to do in a game if he's not in the section. So yeah, and again, Gabriel Luna is just a really, really good fit, because again, nobody's sticking out to me because everybody's doing a great job. So what did you think of this discussion here?
Yeah, I really like this discussion. It's you know, Tommy, I think it's not only the fact that, you know, he when she comes out with the line saying, you know, Joel would have been halfway there if it was you, and you're like, yeah, but he's dead. One, he's dead. Two, we were in no state to go after them, and also he has responsibilities to the town of Jackson. Yeah. To his family, you know, it's not just him. It's different when it's just Joel and Ellie, and, like, you know, Joel really doesn't have any responsibility to anybody, or didn't have any responsibility to anybody but Ellie. You know, I mean, he did have some responsibilities in the town, but I mean, ultimately his responsibility was to Ellie. So yeah, of course he would have gone off gung-ho on his own. That's probably what he would have done, but it's different with Tommy. You know, he's one of the leaders of the town. He's got family, he's got kid, you know, all those sort of things. And as he says, it's not like he doesn't want to go after them, but, you know, they need to do it in the correct way. And I think he's absolutely right there. you know. And as Dina says in the previous meeting, you know, that when they were talking to Ellie, you know, the town itself wasn't in any fit state. Even if she had come forward earlier, they wouldn't have been in any state to put a group together to go after them either, you know, because they were still clearing up from all the wreckage and stuff. So, you know, I mean, but it's a nice little sort of exchange, I think. And it's, as I say, I'm glad they're utilizing Tommy more with this. It's good.
Yeah, I like it a lot. So I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with that. We cut away to a completely new group in the woods. A young girl speaks to an older man, talking about safety, war, and their profit. She wants the spare hammer, as she believes it'll keep her safe. He gives it to her. The group begin to whistle and communicate, and eventually take cover from demons. But the man says it's actually wolves instead. On my first watch, I thought he said both, and I didn't know what he was talking about. But he says wolves and not both, so that was just my mistake. This is a group from the game. I'm not sure how much I should say about them, so I'm not going to say anything about them, and I'm going to let the show reveal them to you instead of me explaining them to you. Plus, they've introduced them slightly differently, which I'm fine with. As soon as I saw these people on screen, and obviously I was waiting for them to pop up and be revealed and showed off, and of course again live action stuff bringing the game to life, I really, really enjoyed this scene, and I really, really like this group a lot. And not in terms of who they are and what they do, but in terms of just the, you know, the design, the sort of concept, that's sort of what I mean about, like, they're just a really awesome kind of cool mechanic. The mechanics of this group, I think, are really, really cool as well, and sort of what they're all about, I find really, really interesting. Of course, we go back to this a little bit later on. David, what did you think of this mysterious group being introduced to us?
It's another collection of people for us to look at, and I presumably are going to feature later on somewhere in the story as well, but I mean, wouldn't be the post-apocalypse without some nutty religious group wandering around out there. I mean, it's a fairly standard sort of tropey thing that you get in these sort of situations. But so I'm interested to find out a little bit more around them. Obviously, they have an issue with presumably the wolves are talking about all the Washington Liberation Front people, I would assume. So, I find that kind of interesting. I want to see a little bit more about them and see where they fit into the rest of the story.
So, because I was going to... I'm using this as an opportunity to poke you and ask you questions rather than talking about the group. So, you don't think that's the only lot of them, and you do think we'll see them again?
Yes, I suspect we probably would, because it would seem weird to introduce a group like that in some way and then not have them pop up, you know, presumably more of them pop up somewhere further down the line. Obviously not that group, but one would presume that there are more of them somewhere out there, and they will pop up somewhere else, because otherwise why would you give them a scene here? That would seem sort of odd if they're just a random group that pop up and then you never see them again, because clearly there is some sort of religious sect backstory thing going on there. I would expect them to pop up later on.
Okay. Well, let's listen for any more whistling, I suppose.
Yes.
So, what was your kind of first impression of them when they, like, well, from their look and their whistling and all that sort of thing?
Well, I mean, I'm very distrustful of these sort of groups whenever we see them in this sort of thing. I mean, you know, we've seen these pseudo-religious groups on various different shows, and they're usually up to no good, or they're trying to say they follow a particular righteous path, and there's usually, once you scrape the surface, something really horrible going on underneath. That's usually the way this works. They might be wrong about this group. They might be lovely. I don't know. But I suspect that we'll find out more later on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did I talk about it in the spoiler thing? I can't actually remember. I could talk about it in the next one anyway. I thought that there was a particular angle they took with these characters and Ellie's reaction, which I thought was very interesting, and more on that later. And they are introduced differently to where they are, how they're introduced in the game. I was just excited. I didn't really care that they were introduced this way, because I was so excited to see them anyway, because I think they're such a cool concept, and the mechanic of them and the whistling and all that, that because when they popped up on screen, I wasn't really thinking of, oh, this isn't how they're introduced in the game. I was just excited to see them, so I didn't really mind kind of if their introduction was different. So I thought that was very, very good. But yeah, there's a couple of different interesting angles they've taken here with how they're presenting this group, and we can talk about that when we get, not in this episode, but when we get some more of that. At a town hall meeting, several townspeople oppose sending a group to Seattle to track them down. Seth angrily argues, even though he's not on the list, argues that they should send the group to defend Jackson, and Ellie reads a letter, her own letter that she's written, persuading the townspeople to send the group out of justice, not revenge. Interesting different use of words. 8 of the 11 town council members reject the proposal. There's a slight scene from earlier when Jesse's talking to Ellie. I don't think I wrote it down or had it here, and he's helping her train, which we saw a little bit of that in the trailer, and he's not obviously allowed to say too much about the vote and all that sort of political nature. I thought it was interesting because, again, I heard him say it 3 times because I watched it 3 times, when he said nobody votes for angry, and I was like, okay, there's a different political climate between the one that we live in and the one that these characters live in. But I thought, is that true? Is he doesn't have to be correct or right or wrong about that, but people don't vote for angry. I think some people do, but some people also don't. So, but he sees it as, but I guess because his demeanor is much more reasonable and measured, and he's a much more, not relaxed, but assured and kind of mature character, which Dina kind of brings up later. I suppose him, like, from his perspective, him saying people don't vote for angry makes sense for him to say, because that's how I think he views that. I just thought that was an interesting little line that got brought up. So, again, none of this is in the game. The main kind of different bit here is, like, again, because Jackson doesn't get attacked, and you don't have the whole sort of, hey, we're recovering, is it the right time, is it the wrong time, and then the council, there's none of that in the game. I think there's maybe like a council, but they're sort of like in the background and they're sort of referenced.
Right.
But then within the context of the show and what they've tried to build out with Jackson and from episode 1 and the attack in episode 2, this makes sense a lot more here, whereas in the game it's more purely down to, okay, this is between our main characters to talk about, Tommy and Jesse and Maria and Ellie and Dina, and those 5 or 6, however many that is, between them are going to have a discussion on whether Ellie and Dina should go, rather than, you know, should we send should we vote and send a sort of posse out. So I thought that was, again, makes sense as to why it's here and how it's here and how you've sort of got here. So, cool to see they've got like a voting system. I imagine they've done this with other stuff in the town, whatever it would be. But this totally makes sense. I thought the speeches from the different characters was kind of interesting to see. Obviously, some of them were like characters we hadn't seen before. I do like later when Gail sort of gives her, or tells Tommy about like what she kind of thought of that and everything. So if we focus on Seth and Ellie here a minute, because I heard a lot of different opinions and a lot of different takes on what people think of Seth being more involved. Because, by the way, in the game, you see Seth at the dance. You see Seth giving the sandwich. And then you don't see him again. He doesn't die in the game. And that's not a spoiler because you don't see him on screen after that. He could die in the show because he could pop up later. I don't know. That's where you got one of the slight differences. Was like, okay, Eugene and Cat's inclusion and things like that. But again, with the TV stuff, this is where you have the opportunity of sort of... more so with Seth than Tommy, because Tommy at least is in, you know, more, he's in more of the game than what Seth is, basically. But that's where I thought it was kind of interesting when you brought him up as a like as a death prediction. And again, I don't know currently from now onwards if he is or isn't going to die, because even after the gate scene here, I and you and everybody else, we don't know if we're going to see him again. Because he might pop up later, who kind of knows. It's a bit of a Bill situation where, because Bill isn't in Last of Us 2, but then he won't be in the second season either, because he died in the game, and you only see him in that point. So that's kind of the comparable bit there, I suppose. So anyway, just sort of explaining that. I think Seth's right about some stuff and wrong about some things as well. I was genuinely kind of torn. And what I like about the kind of... when any character in this entire series does or doesn't want to get revenge or this and that, or that kind of moral compass. And when over the years a lot of people have asked Neil, let's say, like, okay, do you think this character's making the right or wrong choice? He'll always turn around to that person and say, what do you think? Like, I present, as the director of both games, I presented you evidence on screen. But, and this isn't a sort of like, oh, this film ended, what is your interpretation of the ending? It's more your sort of, what is your moral interpretation of if this character's good or bad? It's the same thing with Abby. Like, you can look at Abby and go, you know, she's a villain, you think she's a villain. But then, I don't necessarily. That then and that kind of stuff, because there's no, apart from some characters that are a bit more clear, like let's say David in the first game clearly turns very evil by the end of his, you know, chapter. Because sure, you could look at Seth and go, oh, he, you know, says something really nasty to Ellie, but he's evil. But then, like, he ends up helping Ellie, so what does that mean for his moral compass? But then he's giving this speech here about, you know, they might come back, so let's not, you know, unlock our doors, sort of thing, because they might come back and kill us. I generally don't know if that's the right or the wrong answer, really, but I suppose it's everybody's kind of interpretation. What did you think of what Seth kind of said?
Well, I think what was really interesting about that meeting is they did have pretty much every point of view is, like, covered with the various people that stand up. You know, you have one person sort of talking about, you know, I understand you want to go and, you know, get revenge or justice, but we're in no position, we're still rebuilding. So you've got that point of view. Seth, who is like, we need revenge, you know, they could come back. So he's coming from a place of fear. Then you've got somebody who is coming from the sort of full-blown left-wing kind of, you know, shouldn't we just forgive? And then...
right, the peaceful kind of... Yeah.
And then you've got Ellie, who's like, you know, I mean, I think she does want revenge, but I mean, in the way she wrote it down and the way she's talking about it is her saying... you know, we should be doing this to get justice. You know, it is justice for the town, not just for, you know, revenge for Joel's death, which is an interesting way of framing it. And I don't believe she actually believed that, but she thought it was quite a good way of selling it, I think. Mm. But, you know, and I don't think any of them are particularly right or wrong, which...
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
It makes it a really interesting set of choices. You know, I mean, I think they make compelling arguments. I mean, the first person sort of saying, we're in no position to do it right now. You know, you want to send 16 of our best warriors off, who's going to defend us if they're not here and we do get attacked again. Absolutely fair point. The person who's saying we should basically turn the other cheek is like, well, yeah, in an ideal world, yes, but you're in a post-apocalyptic world where people are going to try and kill you, so I don't think that is necessarily the most sensible thing to do. Seth being on the other end of that going, we should just go and get him, you know, and but do it and doing it for revenge. And then Ellie sort of, you know, we can't let this stand, we need to, you know, we're trying to bring justice. And so I sort of get the range of things that they were covering there, and it is pretty much everything, and I think they made interesting arguments. So as for Seth himself, I think with this and his actions a bit later, it does rather redeem him a little bit. In he's obviously an old guy stuck in his ways, not has an experience of things other than, you know, the sort of slightly redneck world that maybe he lived in. But, you know, I think it doesn't necessarily mean that he is a bad person. I think that was also quite interesting in what they're doing with him. Like you say, I mean, this is completely new character development for him outside of the video game, because he doesn't...
he's got like two lines essentially.
So. Yeah, you know, he's sort of left in as being kind of an asshole in the video game, whereas this is kind of expanding and making it slightly more nuanced than that. And I think that is a perfectly valid thing to do with a character like that, you know, showing that. Yeah, it's maybe he's scared and he doesn't understand certain things, but he's not necessarily a evil or bad person. So, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. It's interesting with, what was it, there was five different people that talked here. He's sort of the one who's expecting or thinking they might, that the same group, and obviously he didn't meet Abby and all that, but that they might come back and, like, try and finish the rest of us off. I found that kind of an interesting angle for him. So, anyway, Tommy... and by the way, people were talking about, like, oh, who do we think voted yes and no? Obviously, the cards get mixed. Because you can't... What you can't really do is go, okay, go from right to left or left to right. Yeah. And, like, go yes, count all that and, like, see who... did it, because I think they just get shuffled, so there's no really way, any way of knowing who said yes and no. So but I'm gonna guess those conversations might come up later. So Tommy speaks with Gale and expresses his worry that Ellie will do something rash following the outcome of the vote, and Gale tells him that some people cannot be saved from themselves and their actions. She also talks about the difference between, like, nature and nurture, and kind of her thought is, like, okay, Ellie was sort of always on this path. Like, she wasn't on a... She was on the same kind of path as Joel, but it's more kind of... He tried to nurture her away from that, but nature has taken over here. That's kind of her take on the situation, which is sort of correct in a way, because if you look at some of the, like, the flashback stuff with Ellie... and the sort of her kind of teenage years and that, she's always kind of had that in her. It just depends on how much over the years that comes out of you, if that's something that's in you. And obviously this kind of thing happening to her with what happens with Joel would be something that would bring that more out of you, which I think is something we're about to see. So, there wasn't something I ever... personally particularly thought of, really, but I guess she might be right about that. So I thought this was a nice little scene between the two of them, and kind of I do think she's completely right about, like, for some people who are, let's say, too far gone in one way or the other, they can't be saved. I know that there's two podcasts recently where I've brought up and explained kind of, again, in my view and in my opinion, how what I would describe as brain rot works. I think she's talking about those sorts of people, those people that kind of have a particular view or opinion about something or are set in their way with a particular thing. And no matter how much you debate or have a conversation with that person or something like that about an issue, and it doesn't have to just be one thing, it could be multiple different things, that's just stuck in them. And you can't, you can change other things about that person maybe, but if they're set in a particular way with something, and I guess they're talking about darkness with Ellie, that's sort of the main point there they're bringing up, that some of those people just can't be saved. And I agree with that quite strongly. So, but the thing you've got to do, and the thing that people around that person have got to do, is try to change them before that happens. It's not an easy thing, and it depends on the context and who it is and whatever else. So, yeah. Anyway, what do you think of Tommy and Gail's conversation here?
I mean, as I said, Gail is, I think he's becoming one of my favourite characters for the show. She's just wonderful. It's like, you know, part of that conversation, she mentions the fact that she's supposed to be speaking to a therapist to unburden herself from the stuff that she hears from other people, but she's the only one there. And Tommy goes, "How do you cope?" and says, "I'm an alcoholic and I smoke a lot of weed." Just thought it was a lovely line. But the sort of general stuff when she's talking about Ellie, and she's sort of convinced that Ellie is not a liar, is a liar as opposed to just lying. I thought that was an interesting little thing that they put in there, and a distinction. And also the sort of sympathy with Tommy and the fact that he has essentially inherited Ellie, now responsibility for Ellie from Joel. And I also think she's entirely right, though. You know, that she's always been angry, and understandably with how she grew up, and she has been already on that kind of path. So, Joel, if it was somebody else that they were going out after, I don't know that Joel would have managed to stop her. If it was somebody, you know, if there was somebody else that Ellie was that passionate about, you know, if it had been, say, Dina that had been killed, would Joel might have gone with her. But I mean, there was no way you were going to stop Ellie from leaving, you know, regardless of what the council says. It's just whether other people go with them or not. I mean, that was really what the vote was going to be about. There was no way that she wasn't going to go. So, you know, I think she is right in that. I don't think there is anything that anybody could have done to stop her. So
She also has to go, otherwise this is the series finale. So
well, yes, there is that.
You have to stop the rest of the story otherwise. Speaking of going out alone, as Ellie prepares to leave for Seattle alone, Dina says that she'll join, bringing appropriate supplies, and Seth helps them leave Jackson with a swap of the old sniper rifle. And he's a bit injured as well, it seems, from the Jackson attack in some way. I don't have a ton to talk about with, like, the she's got, you know, 50 I actually thought it was a little bit funny where she's got like 50 guns on the floor and all this kind of thing. And I think her reaction is kind of, oh, if what about if this is Maria and she comes in and she's like, okay, you've got like grenades and guns and what have you got planned, sort of thing. I thought the line from, and again, Dean is turning out to be a nice little comedy balance for the show at times, when Ellie's like, "Hey, I was just heading to bed." She's like, "No, I don't think that's what you were going to do." I thought that was a good line. Isabel's been very good with the dramatic stuff and with the comedy as well. So, a lot of people are compared in a way as well. And I didn't spot this myself, but I kind of agree. In season one, we've got Joel being the more hardened kind of survivor type, and Ellie's the younger, sort of more jokey one. now that he's gone and Dina's in his place, kind of, she's the more kind of, not as laughy and jokey as, you know, 14-year-old Ellie, because those are different ages and different characters, but because Ellie's more now on this darkened path because of what's happened with Joel, they've kind of switched that up in, yeah, in an interesting way, which I thought could be, which I think could be an interesting dynamic. I mean, that's something I've noticed slightly over the years, but I never thought of directly comparing the two different pairs in that way. That's just something that didn't really come across to me. But yeah, she helps her leave. They have a map and a plan and things like that. So there's not a ton to sort of analyze there. They bring the map with them and that sort of thing. And then, yeah, Seth kind of comes in terms of, okay, where are you going to get this other stuff from? And it turns out Seth is helping out as well. Yeah, what did you think of the actual garage scene between Ellie and Dina?
I really like this. I agree with you. I think Dina's role in this is to kind of bring a bit of lightness to Ellie's world. And I think she does that reasonably well. They're a great pair of characters together. And I'm really enjoying those kind of interactions and the sort of the way that Dina obviously knows Ellie well enough to know that she's not going to let that go. She's clearly going to go after them and, you know, chastising her for not sort of inviting her basically and all that sort of stuff. And the fact that Dina's way more organized than Ellie is, you know, Ellie has got not got the skills really to, you know, she can shoot a gun and stuff, but in terms of actually organizing for a trip, that's just not her. So Dina's sort of there to help her out with that, and also then you get this nice bit of redemption from Seth as well, who turns up with a rifle and is, you know, kind of aggressively trying to hand it over and say, take it, it's better, you know. But I rather like that. It's like I say, I think it's nice that they've been able to do that for Seth's character and make him rather more three-dimensional than apparently he was in the game. So I think that is been a nice little change. But yeah, overall, really nice scene, I think, between all of them and, you know, seeing her sort of get ready and seeing them prepare to head off.
Mm-hmm. I've just realised we never took a break and did housekeeping.
Yes.
I'll give my opinion on this little bit, and I know it's a bit later to do it in the episode, but there's no rule that we can't. I've forgotten that, but I'll give my opinion on this bit here, and then we can cut into that in a second. So just because I don't know either, do you think we'll see Seth again?
I mean, obviously we're sort of following Ellie and Dina now. It kind of depends whether we end up back in Jackson or whether we're following what's going on in Jackson still. Presumably the story's mainly going to follow Ellie and Dina at this point. So I don't know. It really depends how much they kind of go back to Jackson. I mean, we get the impression that there's probably going to be some bottle episodes or some flashbacks or that sort of stuff from the casting, with that seems to be the case. Whether we'll get something from that, I just don't know. I think they managed to do something just with those little scenes with that character that to make him slightly more interesting than just being a sort of one-dimensional bigoted thug, which I think is probably what he was in the game.
Yeah, doesn't really have anything like this. So, but yeah, then they leave kind of through the back door, I suppose, of Jackson. All right, before we visit... Oops, where have I clicked on? Before we visit Joel's grave, let's take a late break, I suppose, and do some housekeeping, and we'll be back in a second. Hi there. If you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy
chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Koalu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Koalu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Koalu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show.
Alright, recently on Entertainment Talk, of course there is the Spoiler Predictions podcast for The Last of Us following on from this episode. I do have to redo my predictions after every week because obviously we get new footage and have to move certain bits around, so you can check that out. Again, that's for game and TV people because there's spoilers for everything in there. Then my review, spoiler free review for season 2 episode 3 for this episode, so if you still want to check that out, if you want to hear me talk even more about this episode, you can still check that one out. Over on the United cast, Liverpool won their 20th title, lifted their 20th title, which equals our record also for 20 league titles. On the same day where we drew 1-1 with Bournemouth, and we spent half an hour in the game trying to break down a 10-man Bournemouth team. David, do you know how I described, because it was a very particular description I used of that performance?
No.
I said it was diabolically pathetic. So, yeah, while we're doing that and scrounging around in 14th, Liverpool have now equaled our record. So let's see what we do about that next season. Over in the United cast as well, I cut out a little bit of a previous episode to talk about the Rasmus Højlund service problem. He is our striker and we don't really pass to him very much, and it's obviously a big problem. But I am baffled week to week when I witness that happening, so I took that bit and put that as its own thing. On TV season review side of things, I did a strong must-see review for Adolescence season 1, both from a recommendation standpoint of how important the show is, and I think basically everybody should watch the show because it's very eye-opening and very important, and it's also an incredible season of TV put together. So yeah, strong must-see, one of those easy strong must-see 10 out of 10 no doubt sort of thing about that. So that's Adolescence season 1 on Netflix. Did our review of course last week for season 2 episode 2, the big episode there, and there was a spoiler predictions one as well and a spoiler free review as well. Over on the film review side of things, I did a strong must-see review for Warfare, which is Alex Garland's new war film based on memories of real soldiers in a particular situation, which was cool. Did a strong must-see review for Daredevil Born Again season 1, so I enjoyed that a bunch as well. Yeah, there might be some podcasts over the weekend and some podcasts in the next couple of days. Of course, we do play against Athletic Bilbao, I almost forgot the name, tomorrow in the Europa League, and we'll see how that one goes. There's still Sinners for me to go and check out, and of course Thunderbolts Asterix comes out in a few days. Got some very positive reviews, so it's like 95% or something on Rotten Tomatoes, so we'll see what that one's about. And yeah, check out everything we'll be doing on entertainmenttalk.org and on the podcast platforms. Let's go to Joel's grave. The following morning, Ellie leaves coffee beans on Joel's grave as she and Dina travel to Seattle. They discuss their kiss at the New Year's Eve party, claiming it didn't mean much, and Ellie gives it a 6. Dina says she thinks Jesse is sad, suspecting he is inherently sad, fearing otherwise it may be due to her. She also mentions she'd already gone back there with Jesse. We'll talk about those bits in a second. Yeah, she still visits Joel's grave in the game. The only difference, and they did explain this a little bit on the official podcast, there's a grave site in Jackson in the game. It's actually kind of like round the corner from Joel's house, which is interesting. She doesn't put coffee beans on there in the game. She just sort of, you know, kneels next to it and does the normal thing that you would do. But they said it was to do with like location stuff, or it was something like that. I personally don't think it makes a massive difference, because she still does the same thing in the end, which is visits the grave. I do think the coffee beans were a nice new touch there. Of course, he loved his coffee, which is something I don't understand, but you do you, Joel. That was, yeah, a nice kind of sad touch. Again, the cinematography here is fantastic. There's some like wide shots and things, which you can do this stuff in a game, but you need the camera to be somewhat near your protagonist so that when the camera zooms back in on them, you then control them. It's not to say no video games have ever done like wide big shots of things away from their protagonist, but it's rarer than you might kind of think. Although with a lot of Sony's first party games, so like Horizon, God of War, Uncharted, Last of Us and all that, they tend to do things like this a little bit more there. But again, that's more kind of in-house development and that sort of stuff. So with video games, it's more kind of, you'll control someone, and this has happened a lot in Uncharted 4 as well. You'll control someone, you'll climb up something or walk up some stairs, and there'll be like the beautiful sea in front of you or something, and you can kind of look at that as long as you want and then sort of manually move away from there. But obviously TV camera work works differently, so just thought that was an interesting, nice, different sort of touch. And there's some good camera work being done here as well. Yeah, what do you think of visiting Joel's grave?
I mean, nice little scene. You're talking about the camera work there. I should point out this episode is directed by Peter Hoare, who not only directed Long, Long Time, which was the Frank and Bill episode from the first season. He is also one of Russell T. Davies' go-to directors and was the director of It's a Sin. So, a phenomenally good director. He was the person that directed this. And so, you know, I mean, you're in a safe pair of hands, which is probably why you got some interesting cinematography this time around that you particularly noticed. But yeah, I mean, the scene itself, I thought it was a nice little scene. Adding the coffee beans was a nice little touch. There's not really a lot more to say about it than that, to be honest.
Yeah.
I know they talked about a little bit about sort of, you know, they wanted to show that scene and wanted to show her visiting Joel's grave as a sort of closure and, you know, for not only for her, but also for the audience to grieve a little bit about Joel as well. So, yeah, I think that's quite a nice thing.
Yeah, somber, it's quiet, it's sad, it's very good. So, yeah, we'll move on from there. And, yeah, they travel to Seattle. They discuss the kiss and everything. She gives it a 6 in the game as well. So, same kind of rating here. Some interesting bits of dialogue between the two of them here. And there is some teasing, which I picked up upon and Craig Mazin also talked about at length in the official podcast. Because there's a few little interesting remixes and bits and pieces. Now, I won't spoil the scene, but the giving a 6 is borrowed from a different scene, which we may or may not get later. We'll have to wait and see what exactly happens. Not going to get into spoilers there. But yeah, a similar version of this conversation happens in the game. I don't know if we're going to get the rest of whatever that bit is, but it was cool to see it put somewhere. So that was good. Yeah, the different teasing bits of, like, giving Xena more of a specific reason to ask, which is, okay, I've never done that, you have, so I wanted to make sure I was good at it. And I saw some odd kind of complaining about this, I don't really know what it was, but her saying, okay, because I'm not gay and you are, which is correct, because I think Xena identifies more as bisexual, hence the relationship with Jesse, and that's how that works. I know, because, well, I'm obviously not a woman, I'm a man, but that's, yes, how bisexuality works. So, whereas Ellie has never been into guys, at least not at this point, and therefore is more gay. So, or is gay. So, Yeah, that was an interesting way to put that little bit of, because that's like an extra bit of dialogue in there in terms of the kiss. But yeah, just interesting that, because I can't quite talk about it fully here, although I did on the spoiler predictions, if any of you want to go back to that one. Her actually mentioning that, oh no, I already went back there, which would probably, I guess, be between post-dance, and because they did say that there was 3 months of a time jump, even though apart from that, there's still probably, what, days, if not weeks, used at some points, that she's gone back to Jesse at some point, which is an interesting note, and we'll pick up on that note at a later point. Anyway, what did you think of this conversation?
I do think it was very funny, you know. I mean, she sort of brings it up, and, like, you know, the rating of 6 and the sort of incredulous response from Dina about, like, you know, a 6, really? Yeah, and just really insulted by it. And then and you can sort of see that I think Ellie is slightly lying about that, and he's trying to play it cool as well. So
it's be playful, yeah.
Yeah, trying to be playful. And then she kind of, you know, makes the comment about you can go back to Jesse then. And she says, oh, I already did, which is almost a sort of stab back at Ellie for giving her a 6, I think, as well. I mean, I don't know. It's sort of interesting that, because I think clearly Ellie wants more out of that relationship. In fact, I think they probably both want more out of that than either of them are prepared to admit at this point. But it sort of makes sense that given Ellie's been in hospital for 3 months and, you know, the trauma that they've experienced over those 3 months, it sort of makes sense that Dina and Jesse may have fallen back in together at some point over that period, you know. But clearly, I don't think that's sort of an ongoing thing, and I rather suspect that we're going to see more of a Dina and Ellie together as this journey continues. So you know, and she does sort of say at the end of it, I wasn't that high, so, you know, I rather like, it's a really sweet little conversation, and clearly they're both trying to play it cool, they're both trying to pretend that it doesn't mean anything, and clearly it does to both of them. It's a really nice little exchange, that, I think.
Nice. Yeah, more on those bits of information later. Where are we at? Gone back with Derek Jesse. Later, Ellie and Dina encounter a group of dead people, the same ones from earlier, including a young girl. She was unfortunately killed, and so was everybody else. But it's more sad that she died, because she was young and innocent, which causes Dina to vomit. They arrive in Seattle and note the lack of WLF members. Meanwhile, a convoy of dozen WLF soldiers march through the streets of Seattle with vehicles, and they're fully kitted and ready to go. This is an army. This isn't just well-equipped people. This is a full-on army. And then we see Manny for a brief moment, which I want to talk about as well. Yeah, again, this, you get some of these bits from the gate. Is this the point to talk about it? It probably is. There's a bit where they're actually going through the forest, the bushes, whatever you want to call it. And now, in terms of, okay, what I've sort of dreamt of for this season to look like, obviously is not quite possible because dreams work differently to real life and all that sort of thing. I've imagined what this scene would look like as well, like the Dina and Ellie on horseback kind of thing, and them going through this forest, which is right out of the game. And this is the bit where I was grinning ear to ear of kind of, I've imagined this to look, this is basically like 99% accurate to how I've imagined this to look, and to see it like this, and to see, again, you've got kind of this, I just talked about kind of when you, in a PlayStation game, when you emerge from somewhere and see something in front of you. And what I'm talking about here is they're kind of walking through these sort of tight bushes, this sort of tight forest area. And eventually you come out of that and you see, you sort of see Seattle in front of you. And it was just incredible to kind of see that on screen here, and to see kind of, because I going in, I didn't think, like, okay, I actually expect any of the scenes I've imagined to look the same as I imagined them, because that's just not quite possible. Not beat for beat anyway. Things can look very, very, very similar, but not beat for beat. But this is the closest one so far of, like, not only video game accuracy, but what I've imagined these bits to look like. And I was just blown away by that. And like realized instantly where they were, and so that was really, really great to see. So but if we rewind back from that a little bit, what do I want to say about this bit? I think they're playing with some emotional reaction parts to this group in a very, very interesting way, which ties into a much, much, much bigger discussion point later, which I will not bring up yet. You could be talking, like, you know, next two episodes or something. And I saw some nervous responses to it, and I kind of had a completely different reaction, which I thought was very, very interesting. And yeah, still sad that this, because I don't know who this actual girl and this guy actually are. They're not, like, these are red shirts as far as we're kind of concerned. Yeah, sad to see that kind of happening. And it, interesting little kind of detail when, because she's like very, very happy when she gets this hammer off this guy, right? And she's like, hey, I'm you know, I'm protected, I've got this hammer. And not only is she dead on the floor, but you can see the hammer's kind of broken as well, so indicating she used that at some point, and obviously it didn't work quite enough. So yeah, but it's a really, really good scene. So I'm going to ask you some specific questions in a minute, but overall, what did you think of this scene?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite shocking. It kind of seems to tell you how brutal this group is. The wolves group that we assume are the people that have murdered this religious cult group, whatever they are. We don't really know enough about them to say any more than that, but yeah, I mean, they it'd be one thing if they'd gone through and they'd found a couple of dead bodies, but to find the whole group completely obliterated, including the children, yeah, I mean, that's quite severe, assuming it was the wolves that did it. And so, yeah, it does sort of certainly seem to indicate something about the wolves as a group. And then, of course, we get this shot of all the armored vehicles and, you know, Ellie and Dina talking about, oh, I'm sure, you know, we'll be fine, we should be able to take them. And then you've got these armored cars coming up the road and all this, like, it's a full-blown army, basically, or full-blown military thing. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be interesting to see what happens from there, I think.
Yeah. One detail I did mention on the spoiler-free episode, because Ellie's had her hair changed here a little bit. Now, it's a small touch, but details are details. And this is kind of, this is her sort of Seattle day one hair. And I kind of noticed straight, because it's got, like, her hair's up a bit more. Again, it's a small little thing, something they didn't even need to do necessarily, but I thought that was just kind of a nice touch, and it reminded me of, like, how she looks at the start of this Seattle journey. Why do you think Dina threw up?
I mean, it's possibly a cliche, but is she pregnant? That's one of the things that, I mean, you know, maybe she threw up because she saw the body. That is a possibility, but it seems an odd thing to put in. And the other thing being the fact that, you know, we know the information earlier that she's been hooking back up with her ex, and then she's throwing up now. Yeah, I mean, is she pregnant would be the thing that springs to mind. But, you know. Or it could be something else. I mean, it could be she's infected in some way. I mean, there is that. But, you know, we've not seen any evidence of that. And it's not like they've encountered anything in that journey so far. So from the information that we have, pregnancy seems probable.
Okay. I got the sense, and this is like a new little tidbit. I wonder if you're supposed to, and this was what I got from it, if, because you get the sense that, okay, Dina and Ellie don't know how big this WLF group is. Clearly from Dina's like, hey, they don't seem to be around much. And then you see this big, you know, tank and an army and all sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I was thinking that, because like when Ellie specifically is looking at this young girl, I was like, okay, does she think that, like, Abby and her, as they call them, Salt Lake Crew, which, by the way, I don't know why people call them the Salt Lake Crew, because they're members of the WLF, but anyway, whatever. Because I think what she's kind of doing there is remembering what Abby's done to Joel, then looking at this girl and thinking, okay, has she gone that far, and is that, like, she's completely horrified by that? I mean, I think she's both horrified by, okay, there's a dead girl in front of me, and also, you know, did Abby specifically do this, or was it some other WLF members? Like, what's, you know, how bad or, you know, deranged is Abby? Would she kind of do this?
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, she knows as much about Abby as the viewer does at this point. So I thought that was an interesting kind of touch towards that. So what was your take from how she kind of looked at that and everything?
I mean, there is that. I mean, it's like you say, she doesn't know any more about the group at the moment, that as far as we're aware, than the audience does. So crucially, we haven't seen who actually killed those people. You know, we assume, we don't know whether it was that group of wolves. Because, I mean, the thing about Abby and that group is, Abby specifically was going after Joel, but very specifically for a particular purpose. And as we've talked about before, you could argue about, like, who was in the right and who was in the wrong over that. But the rest of the group were also sort of almost trying to pull her back a bit from the mission that they were doing. I mean, they'd sort of agreed to go on it, but you know, when it looked like they were in danger, they were trying to pull up back. So that particular group doesn't strike me as a group of people that would just mercilessly mow down a bunch of people and children without reason, you know. I mean, whether you agree with her reasons for going after Joel, she did have a very clear reason for going after Joel. So we've not seen any indication that the wolves are just mindless killers at the moment. I mean, the militarization stuff does rather suggest that maybe, you know, there's obviously more going on there. But from that particular group, we haven't seen that.
We shall see. So there's a little scene at the end here with Manny, and he's been given like new instructions to scout a different area, and he's annoyed about that. This is more of an observation than a complaint. I don't really know why this scene is in here. It's harmless, like whether you put it in or you take it out of the episode or whatever. I mean, it tells you he's being given a change of direction, and we don't know why. But yeah, just thought that was an interesting, curious, odd little thing to just put in there. I don't know. So, anyway, we'll see, what he's going to be scouting for next week, I suppose. So, there we go. All right, let's get some feedback, some emails. Of course, if you would like to write in about your thoughts on the episode, your thoughts on our thoughts, or any of those other things, matthew@entertainmenttalk.org. Social media, eTalkUK or Entertainment Talk, and there's information in your show notes. Abed writes in and says, currently, would you say you like The Walking Dead or The Last of Us more? I would admit in the last year, and a little bit of damage was admittedly done from Daryl Dixon, Book of Carol Season 2, because that genuinely caused me to drop my interest slightly, and I thought it was that bad that it sort of Like, you know when you're watching something from something you love and you're just like, okay, this just isn't doing what it should be, or it should just be so much better. But then I also kind of question the purpose of it after what happens in season two. I think over the years, and it was a long time, I think if The Walking Dead had been treated better, because, okay, from season one, season two so far, game one, game two, Last of Us has been treated a lot better, obviously by Naughty Dog and Sony and HBO and everybody involved. I still love The Walking Dead. I mean, I went to, you know, a convention for it once and all that sort of thing. And it's not as currently active as Last of Us is either. I mean, the main show ended and all those sorts of things. Currently, I like Last of Us more. I think Last of Us is also kind of more detailed, more sort of morally complex and that sort of thing. Although both of them have different aims in their in their stories, Walking Dead doesn't really go for the moral thing as much. It has those bits in it, but it doesn't aim for it kind of as much. But I like the Last of Us a lot more at the moment. But then I don't know what The Walking Dead could do that's like this at the moment. Because it's not like, oh, they're going to sell it to HBO, reboot it and do it, you know, better. Mm-hmm. But I've kind of got from The Walking Dead what I wanted. Like, I read the book, I really enjoyed that, watched the show, that concluded as nicely as it could from the point it was at. They did the Rick and Michonne show, that concluded nicely. And then you've kind of just got spare parts left with, like... Like, the Maggie and Negan thing is very interesting, particularly because of the dynamic between those two. Because at the moment, I don't even want season three of Daryl Carroll, Spanish Journey, whatever it's going to be. Like, if you told me tomorrow that was cancelled, it's not that I wouldn't care. It would just be sort of, it just feels unnecessary. And you could argue the Maggie and Negan show is unnecessary as well, but that's at least got a lot more going on. And plus you've got like, the other characters, and you've got Maggie and Negan's history and stuff. But then we're getting this really incredible second season of this show. So that's how I see it at the moment anyway. How about you?
Well, I mean, unquestionably, The Last of Us is a better show. I mean, it just, from a production point of view, from a writing and storytelling point of view, it is a better show. And that's not to say The Walking Dead, I enjoyed the main show. I mean, there was some bits in the middle that, as we've said before, there's a few seasons that are like wading through treacle. But overall, I enjoyed it as a thing. Last of Us is just, it's a very different beast to start off with. The Walking Dead essentially turned into a soap with zombies. As you further into it, whereas this has a very specific point. It's shorter seasons, it's working very tightly with the source material, whereas The Walking Dead really didn't. I just think it is on all counts a better produced show. And as I say, that's not to say that I didn't enjoy The Walking Dead. I certainly have done. I have the same feelings as you about the spin-offs. I like the Negan and Maggie one. I still haven't got round to watching the rest of the second season of the Daryl Dixon show. And I know there's a lot of people that love Daryl and will watch Norman in anything, but it just hasn't grabbed me at all. I think, like you say, there are sort of spare parts at the moment. It's not really fair comparing Walking Dead now with this, because as they are now, this is a much better show. But I think Last of Us has been a much better show from the beginning because of the way it was handled. It's just the way that it is. It's got decent source material, you've got people that know and love and understand the source material working on it. It's incredibly well cast, it's well acted. And as I say, not to say The Walking Dead didn't have its moments, but this is streets ahead on most metrics.
Warren writes back in and says, the villain point of view from Matt was interesting. Who would you describe as the villain of the overall story? I mean, sure, you could point to David. You could point to... there was an interesting point made about the cordyceps, which is like, okay, you would look at that and go, oh, infected, they're bad because they're trying to kill people. The cordyceps is essentially trying to keep itself alive and spread itself. And that the concept of that is not villainous. It's just, unfortunately, the way that that has to do it, which is by infecting real people. But then cordyceps is not something that's consciously aware of what it's doing because it's, you know, hasn't got a brain that works like that. So, I don't know. You could argue, like, okay, does the lot? I mean, the cordyceps and all the virus stuff is what causes everything to go bad, but it has its reason for doing what it's doing, I suppose. Again, some people could look at, okay, Abby and all that sort of stuff and what she's doing there. I would say it doesn't have a villain per se. It's just more kind of the moral compass of things and the downfall of certain characters, I suppose. It depends on how you look at these characters, because some people still look at Joel as a villain, but then they were really sad that he died. So what does that say about those people? I noticed this interesting path where people really love Joel through the first part of the story. Then he does something that they deemed villainous, and then they call him a villain because, hey, you stopped the world from being saved. And then he gets killed, and then you're sad that he's dead. So I think that says more about the person giving that opinion than the character himself, because you loved him, then called him a villain, then sad that he died. So after he's died, do they still think he's the villain? But then they kind of pass it off to, like, oh no, Abby's the villain now. So, yeah, it's dependent on per person, I suppose. What do you think? Who would you describe as the villain of the story?
It's difficult for me to say, really, at this point. I mean, certainly for season two, even season one, it's very difficult to... I mean, the villain of the story is sort of the situation that they find themselves in. I mean...
Mm.
Arguably, you know, in season one, you had doctors that were doing some very dubious experiments. I mean, you know, you could argue they're the villains, but then Joel kills them all. Does that make you villainous? You know, it's difficult to really say. I mean, at this point in this story, is it Abby? But equally, as I said, she had a reason for it. And from that point of view, you could argue that she was quite justified in what she did. And you can't blame the virus or the cordyceps, really, because that, you know, if somebody had actively weaponized that, that would be one thing. You could blame the people that did that.
Deliberately or something, yeah.
That did it deliberately, you could blame them. But if it's something that just happened, I mean, you know, it's nature. It's going to do what it's going to do. You know, as you say, it's trying to keep itself alive. And that is how it does it. I mean, you know, it's not like a lion is villainous for taking down a, you know, deer. That's just not the how it works. So, yeah, I don't think there is a villain as such for this show. I think it's full of very interesting, morally ambiguous characters, which is quite nice.
What I like as well is, if, let's say, you were sitting next to Neil and you were talking about the story, and you said to him, Neil, who do you think is the villain of The Last of Us? He would turn around and say, what do you think?
Yeah.
And I just like the way that he always kind of does that. Because again, it's kind of, I'm presenting you these characters and their choices on screen. There's not necessarily a right or wrong answer. Again, apart from people like David. But then David's not the villain of the story because he's not been in it for how many episodes? But yeah, he presents information to you, and then you come up with your own interpretation. So, mm-hmm. All right, I think I'll do it for that. Thank you very much for listening. You can find everything else that we do on entertainmenttalk.org and the same name with the podcast platforms. Please subscribe to us on podcast platforms as well. By the way, just a tiny little note on that. I did see there was an update to Apple Podcasts, and on my end, it from other public podcasts I listened to, it made it look like I hadn't listened to quite what I'd listened to. So just check your podcast feeds and check in on all that. They like to change different things, don't they, and make it awkward and weird. So anyway, make sure your podcast apps are working well, I guess, because I didn't notice until the other day. Because there was one that I listened to, and I was like, did I really listen to that? And it marked it as, like, not played yet. So, weird. Anyway, check your podcast feeds, not just for us, but maybe for Geektown and for other podcasts as well. You can support the work that we do by either listening to more episodes, entertainmenttalk.org and podcast platforms, Entertainment Talk for TV, games, films, Main Night Podcast, so take a look out for all of that. If you want to support what we do, yeah, like I said, listen to more stuff, word of mouth, social media, and if you come across somebody who's mentioned something we podcasted on, either Last of Us or anything else, any football stuff or anything else like that, please tell them about the podcast. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers, ad-free podcast review options, look for that as well if you'd like to. TV and film news, Geektown Radio Tuesdays, and Geektown.co.uk. David, that is run by you. How is that going over there?
Going quite well. We are hurtling towards the end of, well, the start of May, and we have lots of expected renewals and cancellations coming up. We have had a few more from CBS over the last sort of week or so. So if you want to find out more about that, you can find it on the front page of the website. Geektown Radio this week, I had Daryl on from Hollywood North News. We talked about a few interesting new movies, some TV series. He's been out to the cinema quite a lot, so he's got a couple of film reviews for Until Nice. Dawn and Cinema and Sinners as well, which he recommended. I saw Captain America Brave New World for the first time because it's now out on home release, so we talked a little bit about that. Latest episode, which is 458, we also talked about those CBS updates and a few renewals and cancellations and highlights for TV and all that sort of stuff. So there's lots of stuff on the podcast. Should also mention, if you're a fan of Daredevil, if you go and find the Geektown Radio podcast feed, you can find an interview with the production designer for Daredevil Born Again. That went up. And if you're a fan of Buffy, you want to make sure that you go and check out the podcast next week when it comes out for the Behind the Scenes podcast. It should be out next Friday. Go and check that out, because there is a very interesting guest that I'm going to have on the show that week. So go and check that out. You're definitely not going to want to miss it if you're a Buffy fan.
Nice. I'm laughing as if I know what David's talking about, but I don't. So, because that's new to me as well. But check out David's teaser next week, I suppose. But yeah, Geektown Radio Tuesdays, geektown.co.uk for all your TV and your film news, so check all that out. And you can find us on YouTube for all the random bits and pieces and gaming stuff and all that sort of thing on YouTube, Entertainment Talk Plays. Thanks for listening, and I'd say episode 4 should be a good one, but they should all be good ones. But we'll see for that next time. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.